Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my pleasure to introduce IQ Al-Rasooli, who has come back from 2 weeks of much-deserved vacation time. I would like to, before we say hello, IQ, and I feel free to disagree with this. You may have a different perspective than I had. But yesterday, I spent most of the first hour of the program sharing with our listeners that there really is no way to resolve the problem in Egypt, much less anywhere else in the Islamic world. Yesterday it was announced that 525 people were killed by the military government that has taken over control of the country from the Muslim Brotherhood. Today it has been announced that the death toll is at least 638. It'll be well over 1,000 by the time all of the bodies are counted. The Muslim Brotherhood says 2,000 people have been killed. Today is being called the Day of Rage, which certainly is appropriate considering that these are Muslims confronting other Muslims. Is there a solution here apart from ridding Egypt of Islam? So long as Islam is the dominant force in Egypt, can this deadly standoff between the military government and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt be resolved?
No, it can't be resolved because this is a fight to the death. By the way, the figure is 625 or 630 dead. They're not telling you that 43 of them were police officers.
Okay.
It's so important to mention that 43 of them were police officers, which means the Muslim Brotherhood was shooting. They always
Right.
do.
Right. Yeah, I'm not, I don't want to make this, make it sound like, and I appreciate the correction, that these demonstrators are lovely, peaceful, civil individuals who want nothing but a democratic Egypt, and that they are being besieged by government troops. The fact is that the government has decided to perpetrate a coup, and that they are shooting live ammunition and they're bulldozing people into oblivion. That is true. The Muslim Brotherhood, however, the other side of this equation, are some of the most reprehensible people on planet Earth, the most godless people on planet Earth, the most savage people on planet Earth. So my point is that there is no good side here. Both sides are so reprehensible that we ought not be trying to negotiate with them. We ought not be trying to buy influence or curry influence with them. We ought, as a nation, not even be trying to resolve this problem. It cannot be resolved.
Agreed. And America should not interfere. It's none of their business. And the more
Right.
they interfere, the more both sides are hating America.
Correct. And we already have about a 98% hate opinion status in Egypt. Right now, if you were to, I mean, most recent polls that have been done in Egypt, it's less than 2% of Egyptians that hold a favorable view of America. So both sides in this conflict disregard anything that we have to say and look at us as part of the problem. So from an American or European perspective, there is absolutely nothing we can do. This is not our fight, and we cannot resolve it. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. And they shouldn't interfere. It will cost America, especially American lives, more. And there is no reason for it whatsoever.
Right. And
this
there's
is
nothing
an internal
that Right, and there's nothing that we can do to bring peace between these warring parties, is there?
You can't bring peace to them. This is a war to the extermination. Either side will exterminate the other side. There's no other choice, by the way. None whatsoever.
And isn't what we're witnessing in Egypt very similar to what we're witnessing in Syria, other than in Syria, it became a proxy war between Sunni Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar on one side, and Shia Islamic countries like Iran and their backers on the other side, so that in Syria we have absolutely a proxy war, which, by the way, I think I was the first to report when war broke out there that it was a proxy war, not only between the United States and Russia and China on one side, Europe and the United States on one side, China and Russia on the other, and Shia and Sunni Islam being represented by in a proxy war of Saudi Arabia in particular against Iran. It's now being reported like that even in the New York Times as a proxy war in Syria. But is there really any difference now between what we're witnessing in Syria and what we're witnessing in Egypt?
None whatsoever. The only problem is, or the only disaster is, the Copts, the Christians of Egypt, now are the target. They have burned down 23 churches. Obama doesn't say anything. United Nations doesn't say anything. The Catholic Church doesn't say anything. No. They're more concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood, all of them.
Correct. And even in Syria, the greatest per capita toll has been taken on Christians because while they're not engaged in the fight, they are hated by both sides. More so, of course, by the rebels. So when Senator John McCain pounds his chest and say we ought to be fighting on beside the rebels and flying missions along in support with them and giving them all manner of weapons, he is trumpeting the utter destruction of the Christian community there, just as McCain is trumpeting the destruction of the Copt Christian community in Egypt when he takes sides in this fight.
McCain should be put in a mental asylum. You should know me by now. My statements are short and to the point. He should be put in a mental asylum. He has definitely gone off his rockers. No question about that.
Yeah, it's perhaps the long stay in the as a prisoner of war warped his ability to be rational. But he is... I listen to his press conferences and I just cringe. It breaks my heart that this man has lost his way to this regard. And the sad thing is that he is aiding and abetting the Obama administration doing the wrong thing in all of these places. And the thing that I want Americans to have an appreciation, and you're just the most sane and enlightened voice in this regard, is that there is nothing that we can do positively in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in the dispute between the mythical people known as the Palestinians and the Israelis. In Egypt, we ought not have interfered in Tunisia, in Libya. There is nothing that America could do to make the situations better in Somalia. These are problems that cannot be resolved. There is no resolution for them. Am I exaggerating here, or is there any possibility, any set of circumstances, that something that a non-Muslim country could do to resolve these problems?
No chance in hell, and even other Muslim countries cannot resolve these problems.
There you go.
Look what they're doing in Syria.
Right. Yeah. The problem is when you conceive a disease. That's right. The other Muslim countries are all intervening in Syria, and look what's happening. All it does is making the death toll go up. In fact, it was just recently announced that the Saudi Arabians are supplying Russian anti-tank weapons and an American shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles to the rebels, who the United Nations has now identified as creating both mass atrocities in Syria, and also that the rebels are the ones who have used chemical and biological weapons in Syria. All we're doing is when countries, Islamic and non-Islamic, intervene, is we're increasing the death toll.
Not only this. These shoulder-fired missiles will be used in the West against civilian aircraft.
Yes, that's exactly what happened in Afghanistan when the United States decided to arm the Taliban and to use Al-Qaeda to fight the Russian occupation of Afghanistan. Those very weapons ended up being deployed against Western targets.
Correct.
And we have, therefore, manufactured our next enemy. The reason I'm convinced, IQ, and the reason that I think you are convinced that there is no resolution for this problem, and when there is no resolution, you ought not contribute to the problem. You ought not engage. There's no reason to engage in a lose-lose battle. The thing that you do is you just walk away. is because Muhammad was unable to give Muslims a reason to live, so he gave them reasons to die.
Only reasons to die.
Right.
Literally, only reasons to die.
And so all the day of rage.
Item in, yeah, sorry.
Oh, just to say, so all of this day of rage in Egypt, the slogan is mercy or death. Is it not?
It has always been death or Allah. Always.
Yes, always. And what Allah's cause, when it's defined in the Quran, Allah's cause, which is jihad, when it is defined in the Quran, is it ever defined in a context that could infer that it wasn't dying fighting for Allah and killing fighting for Allah? Is there any other way to interpret Allah's cause, which is the primary theme throughout the last 24 surahs that are revealed chronologically in the Quran?
None whatsoever. That's why I have $100,000 reward for anybody who can find the word jihad, describing it as a communion with God, spiritual.
Yeah. And so when you have a religion that is this caustic, that is this deadly, that is this destructive, that is this damning of humanity, so long as it's the driving force, is there any way that good and that reason, that a love of life, that anything that would be considered positive can be brought into the equation and prevail?
No chance in hell. They always said, the Muslims always declare, that they love death, while the West, the Christians, the Jews, the Buddhists, the Hindus, love life. And yet, when we defend ourselves against them, and when they get killed, they go into rage. Tell me what the dichotomy is.
If they were willing to die
for their belief system, they should be happy. But
they
happy.
They should celebrate it. You know, there's a double hypocrisy there, of course, is that what you say is not known to most Americans or Europeans, that the leaders of the Islamic communities worldwide say that the reason that they will ultimately prevail against us is that they love death more than life, and that their enemies, the Christians and Hindus and Jews, love life more than death. And yet, and while that is stunning in and of itself, the next part of that is just so unbelievably hypocritical, which is the nature of all religions, is that when they are killed, they use their deaths as the momentum, as the reason to go kill others. It is pure hypocrisy. If they love death, why not celebrate it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll return to Shattering Myths and our dichotomy. Yeah, that's the dichotomy. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Deanna. We're talking with IQ Al-Rasuli, who is the world's foremost expert on the nature of Islam and the consequence of tolerating this religion. And we do not say the things that we say because we want to come across as hateful, and that's how it would be labeled in the politically correct bastions of academia and the media and of politics. But if we do not say these things, if you do not come to know the things that IQ in particular is sharing with you at great personal cost, then you're being stupid. Then you're being the opposite of compassionate. Rather than being hateful by saying these things, we're being loving. We're telling you what this disease known as Islam actually is. We're telling you the truth. Well, we can cite thousands and thousands of statements from Muhammad and his companions to prove it, and have on previous shows, and will do so on future shows. This is not our opinion. It is the absolute unequivocal truth. And if we don't come to know it and stand up to this disease, you're not going to have hundreds of thousands of people dying from it, but billions. Now, with that said, there's something that these nations have in common. In Tunisia, they had a secular government. They now have an Islamic government, and the two leading spokespeople for the secular side of the equation have recently been murdered. In Libya, jihadists decided to overthrow a secular dictatorship, and Libya now has become ground zero for terrorists in the north of Africa, the primary source of weapons for terrorists, and they killed four Americans. In Egypt, the country elected an Islamic government, and now the military has risen in a coup, and they're killing each other at the rate of 1,000 a day. In the Sudan, the Islamic government just south of Egypt has killed 2.5 million Christians and animists over the last 20 years in the greatest genocide since the Great War. In Somalia, terrorism reigns. Islam is the law of the land, and therefore it is the place of ruthless terrorism. Yemen is falling apart at the seams. Syria is engaged in a civil war where over 100,000 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands of women have been raped. Iraq is now embroiled in a civil war because America broke it. Afghanistan is amongst the most hellish places on earth to live. What is the one thing that all nations have in common, IQ?
Islam, Quran, Sharia.
And so long as Islam exists in these nations, is there any hope for the people in those nations?
In fact, as long as Islam exists, slavery and humanity will never be safe at all.
Yeah, we are in a situation where because of OPEC, because of the billions of dollars that have been transferred from the West to the Islamic world, and because now the rage of Islam has a tool to expand its hatred beyond its countries, that the world is going to feel the rage and the sting of this religion. And it's largely due to the fact that our politicians and our academic institutions and our media have deliberately lied and misrepresented the source of the hell that exists in every one of those countries I just mentioned.
Absolutely. In fact, they are more criminal. They are more criminal than anything that Osama bin Laden could have possibly done.
Leading
hundreds of millions of people in the West into thinking that Islam is a religion, that Islam is a peaceful religion, in spite of every single indication, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, since 9/11 and before, that tells you otherwise.
You know, there's really no difference between Hitler's Volksreligion, the religion of Mein Kampf, and the adoration that it brought to Der Führer, and the nature of Islam and the adoration that it brought to its messenger, Muhammad.
Der Prophet.
Yeah, Der Prophet.
You said it many times, Der Prophet.
Yeah, yeah. It is these things are the same. And if you hate Nazism, if you think the religion that made Nazism so prevalent in Germany and caused the death of so many people around the world, if you think that that is hateful and intolerant and that we should not accept anyone promoting Nazism, then you should feel the same about Islam, because there's really no difference between them.
Agreed. 100%. No difference between them.
It's the reason that this connection needs to constantly be reinforced. It's the reason that 77 pages of Prophet of Doom were devoted to the direct comparison of Mein Kampf and the Islamic Quran and Hadith. They are one and the same. There is no difference between them. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. A number of weeks ago, I shared just the first excerpts of a story that was first aired by Channel 4, which is a UK television station. It's called Undercover Moss. I'd like to return to it now that we have IQ Al-Rasuli. For those who do not know, IQ was born in Iraq. That is his country. And he has now lives in Europe. So he may be familiar with this documentary where over the course of a year, individuals posing as Muslims went into mosques with small video and audio video cameras and audio recording devices so that they could show what is actually being said. Because there's a lot of commentary about people saying that the mosques are actually motivating Muslims to be terrorists. And so they wanted to know whether or not the mosques were encouraging a dialogue that would be overall conducive to Muslims living in the UK. The first comment is from was recorded video and audio, so there's no question that it was said. It's from Dr. Izaz Mian on the subject of non-Muslim laws. He said, "You cannot accept the rule of the kafir. We have to rule ourselves, and we have to rule all others." So I ask you, IQ, is the statement that the doctor, who is an imam in this mosque, that Muslims cannot accept the rule of the kafir? Could you first explain what a kafir is? Why Muslims cannot accept their laws, live under their constitutions, and why they are being told by this man that they have to rule all others? Is what he's saying a corruption of the Quran and Hadith, or is it the essence of the Quran and Hadith?
What he said is the essence of the Quran and Hadith. A kafir is anyone who is not a Muslim. Ladies and gentlemen who are listening, today, currently, kafirs represent 80% of humanity. That means all Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, Zoroastrians, atheists, agnostics, anybody who is not a Muslim is a kafir, an infidel, an unbeliever. 80% of humanity.
Can I expand that number just a bit? When the Muslims are killing one another in Syria, and they're killing one another in Iraq, where you have Sunnis killing Shias and Shias killing Sunnis, don't Sunni Muslims refer to Shia Muslims as kafirs?
Yes, and the other way around also, they call them kafirs. So we have 100% kafirs in the world.
Right. And then, and also, when the ninth surah of the Quran defines a peaceful Muslim as a hypocrite, and then it orders good Muslim jihadists to kill the peaceful Muslim hypocrite. So when Muslims kill other Muslims, like in Afghanistan, when the Taliban kills those Muslims who have signed up to participate in the Afghani army, for example, or police, they also call those Muslims kafir, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Everybody
all right.
Is a kafir.
So according to the Quran and Hadith, all Muslims, in fact, all people of the world, because that's what this says. It says that the Muslims not only cannot accept the rules of any other country, no man's rules can ever be accepted by a Muslim. So they cannot accept, for example, in America, the U.S. Constitution, but that they are obligated, what this says, to rule, to impose their rule over others. Are both of those equations accurate?
Accurate, but I want the Americans to understand something. I want to elaborate on something. No Muslim in any country, no Muslim, a believing Muslim in America, no believing Muslim in Europe can ever be loyal to the Constitution of the United States of America or to any constitution which is European. Nor can they ever be friends or loyal to the American people or European people. It sounds outrageous, doesn't it? Well, it isn't outrageous. This is exactly what the Quran tells the followers of Muhammad in every mosque, on every Friday, in 80 languages, in 180 countries, every single week.
So, IQ, why is it then that we hear from nice-sounding, peaceful-sounding Muslims in America and in Europe that are interviewed on television and sometimes on radio programs, that they are good members of that community, that they abide by the laws of that community, that they accept the U.S. Constitution and want to live peacefully and worship their God? Why is it that we hear that when what this imam said is the exact opposite of that?
Because they are hypocrites. The ones who are saying these are liars. It's called taqiyya. It is sanctified religious subterfuge.
Could you explain the term that you quoted and give us the basis for it so that those listening would know that in Islam, lying is sanctioned?
Lying is sanctioned in the Quran. It tells you that if a Muslim perceives himself to be a minority, to be threatened by the majority in any way, shape, or form, he has every right to deceive the majority. He can eat pork, which is forbidden. He can drink wine, which is forbidden. He can go gambling and whoring, which are forbidden, for as long as in his heart of his heart, in his heart of hearts, he is deceiving the infidel so that they can conquer them.
So it's deception that makes the enemy easier prey.
Absolutely.
So when an imam is interviewed in the West, in Europe, or in the United States, and they say the opposite of what the imam said in the mosque, then the imam is deliberately lying on behalf of the religion to make their foe, which would be those who are non-Muslims, victims, ultimately, of Islam.
And that is exactly what's happening in Europe.
And that's
exactly what's happening now in America as we speak, because you have some criminal judges who are allowing Sharia. Sharia is the nemesis of democracy. Sharia is against every moral code in the Bible. Every single item in the Bible is considered null and void by Sharia.
Yeah. Sharia is the antithesis of Yahweh's Torah instructions because Allah and Yahweh are opposites. Allah is modeled after the adversary, Hasatan, and so if you consider the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone, it should be no surprise that Muhammad violated all 10 of them and Allah advocates against each of them. Moving on to the second statement, this is Abu Usama. He said of apostates, if the imam wants to crucify an apostate, then you should crucify him. The person putting him up on the wood, he is to be left there to bleed to death for days. Is there a verse in the Quran? Is there a verse in the Quran, like in the fifth surah, for example, maybe about 33 statements into the fifth surah, where Allah actually tells Muslims to crucify non-Muslims?
Yes. Not only to crucify them, to cut their left hand or right foot, right hand and left foot, yes.
Yeah. Right there. Right. And what's amazing about Quran 533 is that a truncated variation of 532 is cited by all of the deceivers who wants to deceive us into believing that Islam is peaceful, where a plagiarized quote from the Talmud is stated out of context to say that if you kill one person, it's as if you killed all of humanity, when in fact, the very next statement says, oh, you should go and crucify non-Muslims, and you should cut off an arm and a hand, or arm and leg on opposite sides.
Yes, but the worst part of it, the truncated version, we discussed it before, that verse did not address the Muslims. That verse did not address the followers of Muhammad. That verse, it says, we ordained upon the people or the children of Israel.
Right.
It had nothing to do with Islam.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the Arabs. It had nothing to do with Muhammad.
Right. So it's to say that for Jews, if they kill one person, it's as if they killed all of humanity. However, that does not apply to Muslims because it was a statement given to the Jews.
Absolutely.
Abu Usama, speaking of the deficiency of women's minds, said in the mosque in the United Kingdom, Allah has created the woman, even if she gets a PhD, to be deficient. Her intellect is incomplete, deficient. She may be suffering from hormones that will make her emotional. It takes two witnesses of a woman to equal one witness of a man. Does the Quran actually say that women are deficient and they're only half as useful as a man?
nowhere in the Quran. That's hadith, that's sunnah, that's Muhammad's own perverted imagination.
Actually, the Quran does say that a woman is worth half of a man when it comes to providing a witness, but the rest of this in terms of Allah creating women as deficient all comes from the hadith, doesn't it? Now, what we've talked about this once before, and it is it's such a radical perception that people have a tough time embracing it. But I make the point that there really is no difference between hadith and Quran. And I say that because the hadith are all reports from Muhammad passed on to us by his companions. The Quran are oral reports from Muhammad that are passed on by his companions. So if they're both oral reports from Muhammad, both passed on by his companions, how can they really be any different?
They can't be. They're not.
And by the way, that
we have agreed on this subject many, many times. They're not different.
Right. And it's also interesting.
The same one.
Yeah. It's also interesting that as Muslims attempt to follow the five pillars of Islam, you can't follow any one of the five pillars of Islam without the hadith. They're all based on the hadith, not on the Quran.
Correct, but we're missing the sixth pillar, which is the most important pillar, jihad.
Yeah. Jihad. Yep. Here's the next statement. This is the same imam. He praises the killer of a British soldier in Afghanistan, says the hero of Islam is the one who separated his head from his shoulders. So are you a hero of Islam if you kill a man?
Of course, if they kill again, if you do. They are heroes. They are martyrs. They will be martyrs if they get killed, of course. But they are heroes for killing. Look, in Israel, two or three Palestinians butchered little children. I mean, they were babies.
Abdul El Fasil.
And the Palestinians called them heroes.
Yeah. Abdul El Fasil in a British mosque said, "You have to bomb the Indian businesses, but as for the Jews, you have to kill them physically." We'll get your comment on that and a call from Glenn when Shattering Myths returns after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. IQ, before we go to Glenn's comment, I know that in the United States that if you say in any public forum you have to go out and bomb Indian businesses, that would be cause not only for arrest but incarceration. And that if you were to say in any public forum that as for Jews you have to kill them physically, encouraging people to commit those kinds of violent acts is criminal, and you would spend the rest of your life in jail. I don't know the rules in the United Kingdom, but are those things legal to say?
They are illegal to say, but they are legal to say in the mosque.
So why?
Everybody knows. Everybody in the by the way, the military know, the FBI knows, the CIA knows, MI5, MI6 know what is mentioned in the mosques, but they don't implement the rule.
So why can somebody in a mosque be allowed to say this? Now, if a person in a Christian church said, "What we need to do is bomb Muslim mosques, and what we need to do is to go off and kill Jews," that Christian pastor wouldn't have the out of saying, "Hey man, I was just promoting my religion, man. You can't prosecute me for that." Yeah, he'd be in jail, or she'd be in jail. How is it that the Muslim is able to say that in the mosque? First of all, why do they say it? Is it sounds heinous and barbaric, but why are then they allowed to say it?
First of all, they say it because it's a fact. It is mentioned in the Quran and Hadith. So what they are saying is they are representing exactly what their cult belief system says to them or ordains to them.
So they're told to terrorize. They're told to terrorize non-Muslims, what you're saying. The Quran doesn't mention bombs, but they're told to terrorize non-Muslims and to kill Jews. Is that what you're saying? Is the Quran and Hadith communicates?
Yes. Not only to kill Jews, to kill anybody that opposes Islam in any way, shape, or form. This is why they wanted to kill me.
Yeah. Don't they get extra bonus points though for killing Jews? Isn't that a special prize?
Oh, definitely. Yes. A special dispensation. It's got they get 72 virgins plus.
Okay. Let's go to Glenn calling in from Philadelphia. I understand you have a comment that you'd like to make on the discussion we're having with IQ Hour Silva. Hello, Glenn.
Yes. Good morning, IQ. Good morning, Anna. It'd be nice not to have to wait 25% of the program to speak. But anyway, if you keep it up, you're going to be like Alex Jones, where somebody waits an hour and 10 minutes to talk for 10 seconds.
Okay, well, Glenn, you just ended your chance to talk. If you wanted to make a comment, you are welcome to make a comment. It's my opinion, and since I've devoted myself to this program, that talking to IQ Arasuli at the time that he makes available to us is far more valuable. But if you want to call and complain, then as opposed to make your comment, then we'll move on with IQ. IQ, the next statement is Dr. Biala Phillips made the following comment on having sex with girls before puberty. Now, puberty occurs, what, about 12, 13 years old in most girls. So this would be having, on Muslim men, having sex with girls who are younger than 12 or 13 years old. He said the Prophet Muhammad created a practical outline regarding the rules of sex prior to puberty. And with his practice, he clarified that it is permissible. Now, that statement suggests that pedophilia is legal and acceptable in Islam. Surely the most heinous crime that a person could commit against a child is not legal, is it?
Well, legal from the point of view of Muhammad and Islam, yes. But from the point of view of rational, decent human beings and moral human beings, no, of course not, it isn't.
But
isn't evil.
Isn't Muhammad the basis of Sharia law? Isn't Muhammad's words and deeds the entirety of Sharia law? Is there anything more to Sharia law than Muhammad's words and deeds?
No. That's why Muhammad is the most disgusting, most vile, most despicable creature that has ever walked the face of the earth.
So would it be true then, according to this Imam, he's saying that it's true that Muhammad was a pedophile. Did Muhammad, when he was a 50-year-old man, have a sex with a 6-year-old girl?
He raped her when she was 9. And he was 53.
So, since Sharia law is based upon following Muhammad's example, since the Quran orders Muslims to follow Muhammad, all good Muslims would be pedophiles.
Absolutely right, yes.
We'll return to Shattering Mr.
Muslims would be pedophiles.
Monday.